E-commerce giant Amazon rolling out a new plan to hook entrepreneurs into the business of getting packages to your doorstep. It's an answer to one of retail's biggest challenges. Going door to door with only a few parcels is expensive, but customers expect the convenience. Amazon's new program will likely create more competition for the likes of UPS and FedEx. Amazon rivals like U.S. grocery chain Kroger and retail giant Walmart are also experimenting with different delivery models that make economic sense, including curbside pickup.
60-year-old Barbie can now add robotics engineer to her impressive resume. Four new dolls launched this week, complete with denim jackets and safety goggles, add to the doll's 200 careers, ranging from an astronaut to a politician. Barbie's maker, Mattel, teamed up with Tinker, a kids' coding platform, to give those who buy the dolls 6 free computer coding lessons. Mattel has in the past come under fire from parents and activists, saying the impossibly busty doll, along with her former career choices, sent a bad message to young girls.
Beijing and Washington may be sinking into a trade war, but American brands in China are already fighting a battle with local rivals. In a recent survey, names like Colgate Toothpaste or Pampers had lost 10% of the market to local rivals in the last half decade. But China's pushing to boost local brands by creating champions and weeding out weaker players.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's June 29th. Thanks for being here with us for the final business day of the week and our final broadcast of the Associated Bank, The Opening Bell for the week. We're moving into the big holiday week. And we're pretty excited about that. Lots of people are going to probably be on vacation next week. But we'll be here. And for today, though, we have Paul Nolte in studio as our regular Friday guest. Paul from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. And a little bit later on, Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. Brian's going to be telling us about a Department of Transportation Inspector General's report into the FAA that involves Southwest Airlines. That's coming up at about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's check the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures in the U.S. are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 128 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher by a third and about a half a percent each. Crude oil this morning at $73.60 a barrel, which is up about 15 cents. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with the FTSE in London, the DAX in Germany, and the CAC in France all higher. The DAX up almost 1% this morning. And in Asia, markets are generally higher as well. The Nikkei, the Hang Seng, the Shanghai all higher. The Shanghai up by about 2% this morning. The Hang Seng up about 1.5%. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. The U.S. Senate passed a bill, the Farm Bill, yesterday, its version of the Farm Bill, that makes modest modifications to existing farm programs while largely avoiding changes to food stamps and thus setting up a big showdown with the House. The bill passed yesterday 86-11. The legislation renews farm programs like subsidies for crop insurance, farm credit, and land conservation. The House passed a version of the bill that would tighten work requirements for recipients of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP. GOP aides say the bill is expected to go to conference, where Senate and House leadership will try to reconcile their differences. Farm programs are set to expire September 30th, unless Congress acts. Remember our beverage tax here in Cook County? Well, in California, Governor Jerry Brown has signed a measure blocking new local taxes on soda and other sugary drinks for the next 12 years. So nothing like that happening there anytime soon. Beverage companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi moved to convince state legislators around the country to block local taxation of sugary drinks. A growing number of cities are looking toward taxes to discourage people from drinking beverages linked to obesity. Front and center this morning, Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
That's great. Good having you. So what should be our big attention this morning?
Well, I think the markets, and part of the reason that the markets have kind of bounced here a little bit is we have had no trade news in the last 2 days. We've changed our focus now to the fact that Trump is going to be appointing a new Supreme Court yeah. Justice. And so that's kind of moved everything to the back page, and we've seen a little bit of a rebound now in China and Europe. But when you look at the overall economy, we're still bumping along and still doing well. The GDP numbers came in yesterday about 2%. We should be a little bit higher than that for the second quarter, and then we start looking at earnings season in a couple of weeks. And I think at that point we're going to get a much better picture of what the trade tariffs and the implications might be, can be, what some of the executives are looking at for their business model the second half of the year.
Because they have to start planning ahead, don't they? So they're going to start putting plans in action either to counter this or just to let things lie.
Yeah, no, there's a couple things that companies are going to do, and it's part of the reason why Wall Street's getting all excited about the trade tariffs. One is the higher prices, which they can do one of two things. One is pass it along to the consumers in higher prices for cars, washing machines, dryers, etc. So all the aluminum and steel that we've seen the tariffs come through in the last 6 weeks or so. So they can pass that along, which is inflationary. So you'll see higher inflation. Or they could be really nice and say, you know, we're not going to pass those costs on. We're going to eat those costs, which means that their margins are going to come down, which means lower profitability. Lower profitability means lower stock prices in general. So it's not a good thing necessarily for the markets. And that's, again, why the equity markets are bouncing around here a lot.
There was a concern earlier this week about technology. Specifically, everybody thought the president was getting ready to announce some new rules for China investment in technology, decided to push that off onto this committee that's in place to deal with that. That was a pretty big deal for especially tech stocks, wasn't it?
It is, and that's one of the things that's kind of interesting with all the tariff wars. Technology is a huge importer and exporter to China, to the globe. We get a lot of the components and stuff from overseas, and we export all over the place. And technology stocks, if you look at them, have been generally immune to all the tariff wars that are going on. But I got to believe that really that's going to be something that will be coming down the pike, because that's really at the heart of the issue with China is, proprietary information.
Right. The other part of it, too, was the amount of money that China invests in the United States and companies in the United States. Mm-hmm. How big of a deal is that, that part of the equation?
That can be huge because, again, China is sitting on a very large stockpile of U.S. dollars and because of the trade deficit that we have with China, and they have to put it someplace. So a lot of it does go to treasuries. They buy up U.S. treasuries, but they also make investments in U.S. companies. And that is what is allowing them to get some of the proprietary information that is allowing them to turn that to their companies to gain that advantage over the U.S. companies.
You mentioned the GDP numbers earlier. I'm curious, do you think, and I've heard a couple of people keep saying this, we could see 4% GDP next quarter or by the end of the year? Is that still a possibility?
It's a possibility for the second quarter. If you look at the Atlanta Fed's GDP now, it's running at 4.5%. Some of the numbers that are coming in indicate we could be at 4 for the second quarter. For the whole year, I think that's going to be a real stretch, maybe a one-off that we see that type of a number. So I'm sure that that will get pointed up in the press that, we're running at 4%, but I don't think we're going to be able to maintain a 4% GDP. So I'm looking at the second quarter more as a one-off than it's going to be the status quo.
All right, Paul, hang on. We'll be back with Paul Nolte this morning. It's the opening bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The major stock indexes gained some ground on Thursday. The Dow Jones Industrials finishing about 100 points higher at 24,216. The NASDAQ picking up 58.5 points. The S&P 500 ending the session up 16.5 points. Neither the Dow nor the S&P 500 has fully emerged from the precipitous sell-off of February 8th, spurred by inflation fears. At Thursday's close, both indexes had been in correction territory for 98 days, the longest such streak since 2008. Amazon is making a billion-dollar push into healthcare, acquiring the online pharmacy called PillPack. It sorts and ships prescriptions to virtually every state in the country. Wall Street Journal says Amazon beat out Walmart in bidding for that company. And speaking of Walmart, the retailer has added a new feature to its website that lets shoppers take a virtual tour of an apartment and then to buy items from right there. It's aimed at college students who want a quick way to purchase an entire collection of furniture and dorm room accessories. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago at kingsview.com. Paul, let's talk a little bit about the yield curve with bonds. I know we've been talking about that. You've been monitoring it very closely. What's new from last week?
We're getting flatter. So the yield curve is really the difference between short-term rates, T-bills, one-year bonds, and intermediate to long-term bonds, 10 years to 30 years. And normally speaking, if I'm going to borrow money very short-term, those yields are much lower than if I'm going to borrow for 10, 30 years. What's happened because the Fed has been raising rates is the short end has been going up in yield, and because inflation hasn't been a problem, what we haven't seen in the numbers at least, and investors don't believe inflation is going to be a problem, longer-term bonds have been relatively stable to coming down. So the curve is really now very flat. Historically, when you see short-term rates above those of long-term rates, or what they call an inverted yield curve, that's a sign that a recession is on the horizon, very close to, as 12 months to 18 months away. The last time we saw it was in 2007. And so as we get flatter and flatter, and that difference now is about 30 basis points or a third of 1%, we get more and more concerned that a recession, or investors start believing from the bond market that a recession or an economic slowdown is on the horizon. So different than the GDP numbers we talked about in the last segment being 4% for this coming quarter, we could see much slower growth numbers mid-19 and even into early 2020. So somewhere in the next 2 to 3 years, we're looking at a much higher possibility of a recession.
Do we do anything with our portfolios now or in the next months?
Right now, we've started to take a little bit of money off the table over the last 3-4 months or so as the markets have gotten excited about the trade tariffs. But in general, yes, over the next year or so, we will be wanting to be a little bit more defensive. Right now, technology and growth stocks are going very well. When that starts to change, when value stocks, utilities, consumer staples, and so on start to perform better than technology, that's a sign that the equity market is paying attention and believes that a recession is on the horizon. So until that happens, I think we're okay. But I think you want to be alert to the fact that probably over the next 6 months to a year, you want to start instead of putting money onto the equity markets, look for those opportunities, big rally points like today, yesterday, to take a little bit of money off the table.
We sometimes mention on the program, and I know we do during the day as well, the VIX, the Volatility Index, mm-hmm. over at the CBOE. What is the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index?
This one, and actually they have it for the U.S., and they have it globally. All the economic numbers that we talk about every day, every week, there's always estimates. Economists put out their estimates for the unemployment rate, for jobless claims, durable goods, etc. And when those numbers come out, they're either above those expectations or below those expectations. So it's a surprise to the positive side or a surprise to the negative side. And all this index does is accumulate all those economic data points and whether they were above or below those expectations. And what happens is it swings back and forth over a period of time. So when the economy is starting to do well, economists tend to lowball it and say, well, things are getting better, but not that great. And the surprises tend to be on the upside, so it rises. And then the economists catch on and say, well, gosh, things are really pretty good, and start estimating higher, and then the numbers tend to come in a little bit lower than the expectations, and that index falls. So it moves in a little bit of a cycle, you know, up and down maybe once or twice a year as economists try to gauge the speed of economic growth.
And it's where now?
It's been falling actually the last 3 months or so. So again, coming out of last year, coming out of the tax reform bill, expectations were pretty high. And now with some of the trade tariffs and some of the discussions around global trade, economists have been expecting continued very good growth, and the numbers are coming in a little bit light. And again, part of the reason why the markets are unsettled at this point is, again, the expectation that maybe growth, not in this next quarter, but going forward, might be a little bit slower than expectations.
What are you like here at the end of the week?
You know, it's odd because the foreign markets have had really a very rough go over the last 6 weeks as the dollar has been very strong on the trade talks. China has been down, say, for today, 8-9 days in a row. So the international emerging markets have really taken it on the chin. But I think this is a great opportunity to actually increase exposure to the equity markets overseas because we don't think the dollar is going to continue to its strength recently. And those markets are very cheap relative to the U.S., almost a 50% discount to similar companies in the U.S. And again, still like the bond market. The bond markets are going to provide us a good offset to what's going on in the equity market. So you really do want to have some exposure to bonds and probably start increasing it over the next 6 to 12 months or so.
How quiet is it going to be the next week on Wall Street?
It's going to be very quiet because you now have the holiday kind of in the middle of the week. So you're going to have people taking the front end or the back end or taking the entire week off. So trading activity we expect to be pretty low. But that also means that with low activity, you can get high volatility in the markets because there's not as many people at their desks, so they can really kind of push around stock prices. So I would kind of discount some of the activity that goes on next week on Wall Street.
All right, Paul, have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. You can find out more about Paul and his colleagues at kingsview.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Chicago fintech company TastyTrade has raised $20 million in a Series C funding round to help it grow its trading and investment media platform. The round was led by TCV, a Silicon Valley-based venture capital firm. TastyTrade's total funding now sits at nearly $60 million. Chicago-based EventUp, an online marketplace for event venues, has been acquired by Gather, an Atlanta-based event management software platform for restaurants and other venues. It will operate as a wholly owned subsidiary of Gather and will maintain its Chicago office. And bike-sharing startup Pace is launching Pace Parking, a new parking platform for dockless bikes, electric bikes, and scooters. The new platforms are now available in Chicago, Austin, and Bloomington, Indiana, all cities that required that dockless bikes be locked to a bike rack or other stationary object with a traditional bike U-lock while not in use. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the program. Today is Friday, and we appreciate you being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. One of our other regular Friday conversations is with Brian Summers. He's the airline business reporter at skift.com, and a lot to talk to Brian about today, including today being expected to be one of the busiest days, if not the busiest day, at the airport for the 4th of July travel season. Brian is with us via Skype from Los Angeles this morning. Brian, let's begin, though, with the Department of Transportation and Inspector General's report of the FAA involving Southwest Airlines. What's going on?
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated. The FAA obviously supervises Southwest for lots of things, including what it does as far as maintenance. The FAA is part of the Department of Transportation, and the Department of Transportation, like every government entity, has an inspector general, and that person can audit the FAA to figure out if the FAA is doing a good job or a bad job. In this case, the inspector general has said, we want to audit the FAA, and specifically the audit is going to look at whether the FAA has done a good enough job of supervising what Southwest does as far as maintenance. And I think that we all know that this is coming only several weeks after Southwest had a major engine failure that caused the first U.S. airline fatality in about 9 years. So I don't think this timing is just fortuitous, but it's a little hard to know what's going on. The Inspector General's letter announcing the audit didn't say too much about the reasons for this. And let's remember here that the audit is of the FAA. So yes, we could find that Southwest didn't do things exactly by the book as it should have. But if an entity is going to get in trouble here, it's probably going to be the FAA and not the airline.
Was there a complaint that may have led to this? And how big of a deal was the Southwest air window incident?
Well, we've talked about the Airwinto incident before. It was a very big deal, but it was also a very big fluke. You just don't see things like that happen very much, and nobody's sure that we'll ever see it again or we'll see it again soon. Engines fail, of course, but the idea that a piece of the engine would hit a window, break the window, and then a passenger would be pulled out of the airplane, that's just about impossible. So people shouldn't be worried about that.
How often does the Inspector General conduct these sorts of investigations?
Well, it's funny. I've been covering airlines for a long time, and I don't remember the Department of Transportation's Inspector General really looking at the FAA. But we are seeing several audits right now of a very similar type. So people who listen to the show a lot may remember you and I spoke about a very similar audit about the FAA's oversight of the maintenance practices at Allegiant Air and American Airlines. So maybe there is something there. Maybe the Inspector General is seeing the FAA just isn't doing its job in the right way. And of course, I think some people may remember a couple months ago, 60 Minutes did a big expose, a nice piece about some oversight issues at Allegiant. So this isn't coming from nowhere. The FAA has been under certain criticism, but generally, I hear pretty good things about the FAA, and airlines tend to have a good relationship with the FAA, which, of course, might be part of the problem. There are some folks that think that the relationship between airlines and the FAA might be a little too cozy.
And the end result for those of us who fly is that the goal is to create a safe flying routine, right?
Absolutely. You know, every airline says its number one priority is safety. And oftentimes, right, when you have a business and they say our number one priority is X, and maybe it would be customers or this or that, you can say, you know, I'm not sure that's true. I bet their number one priority is their own profits. But I'll tell you, I deal with airlines day in and day out, and every one of them is obsessed with safety. One reason is it's the right thing to do, of course, and they take it seriously for that reason. But two, you know, if you have an airline that develops a reputation as being unsafe, whether it is or not, that is just going to kill your profitability. People like a deal, but if they think their airline isn't safe, they're going to fly someone else. It's pretty simple.
So is there a timeline for this Department of Transportation Inspector General investigation?
It's supposed to start right about now. Again, I haven't followed these very often, so I don't know how long they take, but it could be a while.
Brian, it's the Independence Day week coming up. A lot of people are taking vacations for the whole week, heading out to the airport. Is the system ready for another busy holiday?
Well, you know, the system probably isn't built for as many passengers as we're going to see over the next week or so. That happens at Christmas. It happens over Thanksgiving. It's one of these times of the year where airlines are pushing their planes to fly as much as possible. So an airline that might fly its airplanes only usually 10 or 11 hours a day might fly them 15 hours a day now. Lots more people are going to be traveling. So this is the time of the year when, assuming that you don't have TSA pre-check or something like that, you got to get to the airline early, or you got to get to the airport early, and you have to be patient. There isn't much more to it than that. And as some stories have made clear this week, you better hope that in places like Chicago or elsewhere, there are not thunderstorms. Because it's weird, right? We've been flying for 100 years or so. But when there's a thunderstorm in Dallas-Fort Worth or Chicago or New York, the system just comes down. You know, the airport might close. You might take half as many arrivals as usual. Those can have a cascading effect. And before you know it, everybody is in a lot of trouble. Even if the storm isn't in Chicago, even if the storm is in New York, it can be a problem. So let's hope for good weather everywhere.
You'd think the day before the 4th of July would be the busiest of the travel days of the period, but apparently it's today.
Yeah, it makes sense. Of course, July 4th is on a Wednesday, so it's hard to make a true long weekend of it, and you've got to decide if you're going to take the first week or the second week or the second Friday, and I guess today is a pretty big day.
There have been some incidents recently where people have had too much to drink on airlines, even one case where I think a flight attendant may have been punched. There was another unruly passenger on another flight. There has been some discussion about whether or not alcohol should be served on planes, but Is this really something that airlines might be considering taking away?
No, it's not really seriously being discussed. There have been a lot of incidents in the news, and I work at a publication called Skift, and I had a freelancer write a story about this topic exactly this week, and she found that there really is no appetite to take alcohol off of airplanes. One of the things that I found just covering this is you do have people who are drunk on airplanes, and it's terrible. It's hard. It's not impossible, but it's hard to drink so much so quickly on an airplane to really be belligerent. And one of the things that happens is people, they get on the airplane drunk and then they drink more, and that's when bad things happen. You know, there's some folks out there that want to limit how much you can drink in an airport, but that's tough. People, you know, gate agents can refuse to allow you to get on the airplane if you're drunk, but that's a hard thing to do. And if a gate agent is wrong, if they accuse you of being drunk and they don't let you on the airplane, and then you complain on social media and it goes viral, then it's a disaster for the airline. So I'm afraid it's going to be status quo for a while. I can tell you that I was on an airplane this week where one of the flight attendants was taking her job as alcohol monitor very, very seriously. And she was really only allowing people to have two drinks or so. And questioning them about how much they were drinking. And it was unusual, and it really annoyed a few people. So I don't think we want that to be our future either.
Brian, always good chatting with you. Have a safe 4th of July.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is the airline business reporter for Skift, skift.com, and at Skift on Twitter. Make sure you follow Brian as well, at Brian Summers. And sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report delivered to your inbox at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 552 now. Let's check the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures up 102 on the Dow, 29 on the NASDAQ, 10 on the S&P. Now an update on agriculture and commodities this morning. Orion Samuelson is with us. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, and my annual summer cold sore throat arrived early.
Oh, wow.
But it came in last night, and so I would guess by Monday it'll be back to normal.
Does it hurt? Do you have a sore throat?
No, it does not hurt, but it does change my voice a great deal.
Well, I hate to ask you some questions and torture you.
No,
here.
Go ahead. If our listeners can put up with my answers, that's fine.
Okay. Well, the big story, obviously, one of the big stories this morning is the Senate passed its version of the Farm Bill yesterday.
And by it's a pretty good vote,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Was it 82-11?
86-11 after the House passed it by 2. But there are, I think, quite a few differences. I talked to the chairman of the House Ag Committee, and he said the conference committee meetings could be rather contentious. And food stamp program or the nutrition bill, or call it SNAP, whatever you want to call it, traditionally is one of the sticking points in putting a farm bill together. And we really don't have a farm bill until it's on the president's desk and he signs it. So it's going to be an interesting 2 weeks.
Yeah, and September 30th, I think, is the day that the farm programs are set to expire, right?
And yes, and if we don't have a new farm bill by then, we go back to a farm bill passed in 1948 to operate the agricultural programs until we get a new bill written.
Wow. Also yesterday, numbers from the USDA, farm prices.
Farm prices. I didn't see that one, but I did today. We're going to get the quarterly report on grain stocks, and we're also going to get the planted acreage report. The end of March, we get the planting intentions, and then finally, the end of June, we get how many acres they actually planted to corn and to soybeans. And we'll get that. The other big report that came out yesterday, the hog population. Now, this is a dinner conversation for you later tonight. How many hogs do we have in the United States? Well, we have quite a few, not nearly as many as China. But the hog population on farms in the March-May quarter up 3.4%, a record high for the quarter, according to the big crop report yesterday. And more hogs in the pipeline present a demand challenge after China, in early April, tacked extra tariffs on U.S. pork. And so we've got a lot of pork that's being produced right now, and we're going to have to find a way to consume it. So
Sounds like an excuse to have more bacon for breakfast this morning.
Well, I think it's a good idea to have bacon with anything, Steve.
What's on the morning show tomorrow?
Jim Fazell is going to be here, and we're also going to meet the new CEO of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. She's quite a lady, and we'll be talking to her tomorrow morning on the show. But, Steve, we'll be hearing from Jim Fazell on what all of the rain has done to the garden and to the lawn and to the trees. So we'll talk about that.
All right, great. Orion, feel better, okay?
I will.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Make sure you listen to the morning show tomorrow morning, beginning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, June 29th. The Commerce Department will issue its report, May report on consumer spending, which accounts for about 70% of U.S. economic activity. We'll also get a look at the Chicago PMI. Consumer sentiment report is also due out today. Darden, Kroger, our earnings on the earnings call today. Actually, yesterday Kroger was earnings. Today it's the OPEC meeting. Also, some bank stress test reports as well that we expect for maybe moving the markets this week, today, and through the rest of this day.